Berkey, how are you this morning?
Good, guys. How are you?
Good. You've said your son works for player safety, and what did you think of last night, TJ Oshie? You know, the hit's fine by Morrissey, but are we now going to get to the point where that little extra is something that won't be allowed, or do you think they'll look at this and say, hey, it's a hockey play?
Well, I think they're very different. This was, I think, much more a continuous thing rather than, I really thought with Pettersson's thing, Matheson had finished the check, the puck's away, and he just said, well, hell with this, I'm throwing him down. This, to me, looked more continuous, and it's a much bigger-bodied guy. So I'd be shocked if this gets any kind of scrutiny. And the play itself, the notion of two players wrestling to throw each other down, that we're going to get that out of our game, then let's just start playing ball hockey.
Sticking with that, and I guess, yeah, and there's still the school of thought that you want to keep that physicality. Speaking of which, Tom Wilson returned. You were on the panel last night on the National Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. As Tom Wilson returned this week, he had his suspension reduced to 14 games. He's going to get back pay because of the games that he missed. But, Brian, look, I mean, nobody's going to dispute that Tom Wilson is an effective hockey player and a talented hockey player with that. But does it undercut the Department of Player Safety or the guys who are trying to hand down the crime and punishment when you see something like this happen that he wins here, I guess?
Well, the question is, what was the appropriate suspension in the first place? And yes, my son works for player safety. I always offer that disclaimer. And I'm generally supportive because I think they do a good job. Like George Parros played for me. The guys they have as player reps that work on this are sharp guys. Like Chris Pronger was on there. And they're hard hockey guys. They're not faint of heart at hitting. So, but as I said at the time, I felt that as soon as I saw the hit, I said Wilson's going to get double digits, probably mid-teens. So I thought 15 is what he was going to get. He got 20. And I said, okay, we can all live with that. We want this guy to stop playing the way he does. But the arbitrator and the union fought desperately, desperately in collective bargaining to have a right of appeal. That was like a center point of everything they talked about. And so this arbitrator has now twice reduced suspensions, one to Austin Watson and this one to Tom Wilson. And I can live with any number. Like I'm very frustrated by the fact that the league and the union didn't fix the appeal process so that it couldn't cost a player extra games. So it cost Dennis Weidman extra games. I said then to the league, you've got to fix this. You've got to streamline the appeal process. It's absurd. I mean, it's Keystone Cops that Wilson missed games that he didn't have to miss. Like, if Washington misses the playoffs by 2 points, how do you think they're going to feel about this? If Wilson had a bonus for something or he loses seniority with his pension over these two games, the fact he got the money back, they've got to fix this. This can't happen again. In my mind, it's a real black eye to the league that they don't have procedures that comprehend this possibility.
And Brian, I know the GMs were meeting this week. Do you think this is paramount on what they do as they look towards that new CBA? Is it a big issue for everybody?
No, it shouldn't. This should be an issue. It's procedural, right? So maybe the right of appeal is something the league is willing to take a lockout over. As I look at collective bargaining coming up, I don't see an issue. I said this on TV the other night. I'm not aware of an issue. This is from talking to players and GMs. I'm not aware of an issue that would justify a work stoppage on either side. I know the players hate escrow, but there's ways to tighten up escrow. And there's no way you can do a hard cap system with a percentage split and not use some form of escrow. So I don't see something that would justify them striking. I don't think this right of appeal, which is so rare, I don't see that justify a lockout. So, no, I think it's something the league and the union should fix now. I don't think it should have anything to do with collective bargaining. They can bilaterally amend any part of the CBA.
Brian Burke with us here on Sportsnet 650. I do want to touch on the Calgary situation that went down just the other day with respect to the plebiscite and the vote and the ruling and what it all means now for the Flames. But I do want to touch on a scenario that's happening here close to home with You know, Alex Edler, we talked to his agent yesterday. Alex is in the final year of his contract with the Canucks, and he's slated to be an unrestricted free agent at season's end. He has a no-trade clause, Brian. We asked his agent yesterday if, you know, would his client like to stick around for another contract, and have there been any discussions? I think they would like to stay here, but there's been no discussions at this point in time. There's a school of thought that some people think, hey, trade him at the deadline, ask him to waive his no-trade clause. How would you handle a situation like this that, when healthy, he's still playing 24 minutes a night? How do you approach this with a player who's been with this team for north of 10 years?
Well, first off, I wouldn't be talking to him about a new contract until the season ended. Because this is a player that, you know, has had some injury problems this year. He's getting long in the tooth. He's been a real good player for the Canucks, and I actually like him as a player. But I wouldn't rush to sign a player. How old is he now?
32. Like, he's not that old.
Well, I would wait till the end of the year. And as far as a no-trade, I had a different view about no-trade clauses since I never gave a full no-trade, no-move. Never in my career did I give one. Now, I might... Maybe I'm getting older. I might have forgotten one here or there or something, but I don't think so. I gave modified no trades where the player could give me eight teams he would not accept a trade to. So having not ever given a full no trade, no move, I didn't feel bound by the ones I inherited. So we had that exact situation with Thomas Cavalier, who's a great guy, but it was his last year, and he said, his agent said, I'm not waiving my – I have a full no trade, no move. And he said, I'm not going to waive it. I said, okay, then he's played his last game here. So, amazingly, we got a list of teams. So, there's a way to the full no trade, no move. If Jimmy Benning didn't give it, I don't think he's bound by it. Even if he did, I think it's, you know, like, to me, you're in the last year. We've honored the no trade, no move. You've lived in Vancouver. It's been great. We're going to miss the playoffs. And, I, by the way, I'm not willing to concede that for the Canucks at all. But if it's that situation at the deadline, I'd be very comfortable with Jim Benning saying, what do you think? Players usually waive it because they'd like to, if they think they're going to miss the playoffs and they want to get another contract, they usually waive it and say, I want to go somewhere and win. It got Thomas Cavalier a ring.
Would you want him to be part of your future next year if the numbers were right?
Who, Alexander Edler?
Yeah.
I'd have to see who else is out there on July 1st. I mean, he's still an effective player. He's a good player. They really miss him. You know, talking to Jim Benning the last couple of days, they've got six guys injured. He might be the most impactful. You know, and you look at, and just touch on one thing I wanted to make sure I mentioned. The Canucks have played more road games and more games than any team in the league. And it's no surprise to me they're banged up. So I think the players that are healthy are doing a marvelous job keeping them in there. You know, right now, they're second in the Pacific, which is just a miracle because all of us, the start of the year, wrote them off. They've done a marvelous job. So as far as who you want back for next year or not, I'd want to see what the list is.
Do we put enough into that? Of course, you were the GM here. You were in Anaheim. You know travel. No one can remember these guys going out east twice this quick. They've played more games in the Eastern time zone than they have in the Pacific. I guess at the end of the day, where they are in the standings is such a compliment because obviously it'll get easier. What kind of bitch does a team have to the NHL to go, come on, are you serious? You got to look at the schedule. This is unfair.
Well, it used to be when you got the draft schedule, you used to sit down and make a list. Dave Donis and I would sit down with Mark Crawford and say, all right, what's the most egregious thing on here? And it'd be a back-to-back, first week in April, with two teams we were likely to be in a dogfight with. And we'd say, all right, we got to get that one moved. And then you'd back down and you'd say, here's our top six priorities. You know, this one here, we play four games on the road, come back, play one, go back out. And you go back to the league, and you usually get one, two, or three changes. Now it's at the point where you get zero. Whatever draft schedule you get, you can call a league and whine and bitch. That's the schedule you're going to get. And what the Canucks have is outrageous to me. Calgary Flames just went all the way east, played two Eastern Conference, you know, Eastern time zone opponents, flew back for one, and then flew back and did it again. Like, that's outrageous. It's the wear and tear on the players is the number one thing. It's not fair to the players. But the cost is staggering. It's $30,000 an hour on Air Canada jets for a block hour. So if you fly east, it's $120,000, 4 hours. And then you come back, it's 5 hours, it's $150,000. So a team drops $300,000 to play two road games. I can't believe the owners haven't screamed and yelled about it. I can't believe the players haven't screamed and yelled about it. And it's a rant. We'll get into this later in the season. I think there's a better way to do this.
Hey, tell me this real quick then. If and when Seattle winds up here in the NHL, if you've got skin in the game from a Vancouver Canucks standpoint as a manager or an owner, are you guys busing for that trip then down the I-5, or are you flying on that one?
Hey, if there's no traffic at the border crossing, it's a two-hour and 15-minute drive, as yeah. I recall, at midnight. No traffic, no lineup at the border. It's a 2-hour and 15-minute trip. I think that's the best I ever made it in.
Yeah.
Without breaking the law, obviously. nobody buses 2 hours and 15 minutes. Okay. They're not going to bus the sail. They're going to fly.
Okay.
What'd you make of the result in Calgary? And what do you think that does to the Flames and their future? Is it murky?
No, I don't think so. They've had some good discussions away from out of the public eye about a building. It's far from done. I think having the Olympic bid would have helped, except for one thing. It's amazing to me. The IOC came into Calgary last year to inspect the facility. So you want to have Olympic Games like you guys did in Vancouver, you've got to have a facility that seats 35 to 40,000 people for opening and closing ceremonies, and you've got to have an NHL arena. Okay, so they came in to look at the facilities, and we thought, they're going to say, you know, this is totally unacceptable. McMahon Stadium is what, 60 years old?
It's
70
a
years old.
It's a dump.
Yeah, it's old.
It's a dump. And the Saddle Dome is the oldest building in the league by 10-plus years, I think, now. So we thought they were going to come in and say, unacceptable, unacceptable. There's nobody bidding on the Olympics. Nobody wants the Olympics. It's too big and too expensive. So guess what? They were like, yeah, that's great. McMahon, great, perfect. A1. Saddle Dome, yep, tip-top. So that's when I thought, for the first time, I thought, oh, boy, we might be screwed here. So I don't think this impacts, it means there's no building. Certainly as part of an Olympic bid, you would have thought that, I think the owner's vision for Calgary next, where you take care of both facilities at once, was brilliant. But I still think they're going to get a building there.
It's just, I mean, when you look at the dollars, I mean, you're probably talking about close to $1 billion in infrastructure, though, trying to replace or upgrade McMahon and then the Saddle Dome as well, though. I mean, it's are the dollars there, I guess? That's the question.
Well, the dollars, it all depends on your priorities, I guess.
Yeah.
Has what have BC Place, which I think cost taxpayers, what, $220 million to retrofit?
No, I think it was a half a billion.
Half a billion.
Yeah. So, okay, has that not enhanced the city? Does it not attract events? Was it not a good investment of tax dollars?
See, I personally speaking, I think it's a waste for a dome stadium here in this market. And in terms of, like, how many events are you hosting? And for it's too big for a Whitecaps team. It's too big for a CFL team. You know, I don't know if that's necessarily the best, you know, from a resource standpoint. I don't know if that made the most sense. But that's my opinion on that one.
Yeah, and I see all the concerts that skip Calgary now. It's not just about the Flames. It's about the city needing a venue that's current. And I think one of the great investments, and the Americans figured this out a long time ago, they're perfectly fine with tax dollars going to sports facilities because of the economic impact. You look at the Canucks built their building without much public assistance, but you look at the economic impact on a game night. The restaurants downtown, the taxis, the hotels. You look at what a visiting team leaves behind in per diem and hotel, what they spend to land at the airport. You add it up, even using the lowest numbers, and it's close to $100 million a year in economic impact. Using the opposition's numbers, using even people who hate stadiums and arenas being built with public funds. So I think that argument, is it a good investment based on the economic impact it generates? I think that you're talking, if you don't think it is, for a new arena in your city, I think you're a flat earth person.
You know, and it's funny, there was the state of Louisiana, just in closing on this, the state of Louisiana just released numbers a few days ago. Here, I always like to bring it back to wrestling. They hosted WrestleMania, and the state of Louisiana and New Orleans suggesting that they had $175 million of economic impact for a weekend of people coming to watch a stadium show for one weekend. So
we're not lowering the conversation to wrestling fans, Brian. That means you have to go. The
Brian would be a great wrestling manager, though, wouldn't
he? Oh yeah, I don't think he's set up. Berkey, thank you as always.
Barry, you just joined the Flat Earth Society. I'll talk to you later.
Sportsnet 650.